suo nome è Vincenzo, il cognome è
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science and Sport. Today we are in Sant'Anna di Vinadia.
Cozze ci delle cozze, cozze vicine.
Vincenzo Nibali fan club from Tuscany, where he was based as an amateur. Ragazzi, non era eterno a caldo, non avete mai dubitato?
No, fin dal primo momento lo sapevamo che andava a finire così. Sì. Infatti questo giro l'ha vinto, se l'è meritato.
Una parola in inglese?
No. Dai, no, siamo italiani, giusto parlare italiano, forza Nibali.
Forza Nibali, they didn't want to speak in English, but I think you got that. That was the Cannibali, Vincenzo Nibali's longtime fan club, just saying how happy they were and how they never really doubted that he was going to do it. Remarkable performance by Nibali, and we've seen his fan club at various races before the Tour de France last year. The Cannibali, they follow him wherever he goes, and it will be a long night of celebration for them, I think. Kreuzberg comes over the line and collapses on the tarmac. He's got his head bowed and he's sitting on the tarmac trying to compose himself here, and obviously heartbreaking for him. After the fall yesterday, he recovered brilliantly today, but ultimately it wasn't enough. Giro d'Italia that looked as though it was in the bag a few days ago. He now finishes, I think, in third place, although waiting confirmation of that. Trying to raise himself to his feet now.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How do you feel?
I'm completely... I was on my limit today and I couldn't do any more than I did, and this was it. And after a crash like yesterday, you have to fight and to see where you finish, and this was all there was in it. In the end, like I said yesterday night, I didn't expect to start or that I would follow the guys. So in the end, I think I have to be satisfied after what happened yesterday. But I'm still disappointed after the result, which was a big chance for me to win a Grand Tour, I think. And I showed I was one of the best in the race. And everything, staying on your bike is also cycling, and that's what I liked yesterday.
What do you learn and take away from this Giro?
it ain't over till it's over, and you see, it's a fight till the last day.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Daniel Freib.
Hello, Richard.
Dove siamo, Daniel?
We're at Sant'Anna di Vinadio. That's how they used to say it on the mineral water advert, more or less.
We heard about that last night. Yeah, well, what a stage again today, Daniel. We were played in there by a little package that you collected at the finish.
Yeah, it was tense, wasn't it, today? Throughout the day, not a lot seemed to be happening while we were waiting for it all to crackle into life. We knew that Nibali was going to attack. Paolo Slongo told us that last night in the podcast. That's Nibali's coach at Astana. He said they were going to try and blow the race apart again. Really, they didn't need to blow it apart too much, did they? Because he only needed to gain 44 seconds on Esteban Chavez to take over the pink jersey. Left it fairly late. They left it until quite high up on the Colle della Lombarda. And Nibali then, with his descending ability, was able to take more time out of Chavez, who he'd already dropped on the climb of the Lombarda. And from that point, it was really a foregone conclusion, wasn't it, from the bottom of the final climb to Sant'Anna di Vinadio. And we heard there Nibali's fan club, the Cannibali. What do you think of that nickname, Rich? What do you think of that name? Tremendous, isn't it? And their emblem is a shark. Just reassuring you that they may be called the Cannibali. So a rather lame play on words there, but their emblem is the shark.
Well, they were a raucous bunch. And obviously, they were extremely happy. Nibali completed the dramatic turnaround. Although I said it last night in the podcast, didn't I, that Nibali was going to win? I was sure that the momentum he'd built up yesterday would carry him through today's stage. But also, and equally, if not more importantly, and something that nobody really focused on a lot, was that Chavez cracked at the end of yesterday's stage, and he lost 40 odd seconds.
Right.
In a couple of kilometres, that's all Nibali needed to gain back today.
Very true, Richard, and he never really looked smooth today, did he, Chavez, on any of those climbs. He had what the Italian commentators always say, a brutta faccia, which literally means an ugly face, which I always think is slightly harsh.
Especially with such a charming chap as
he did,
Chavez.
And talking of charming...
Angelic, really.
Yeah.
Cherubic.
And talking of charming bike riders, wasn't Stephen Kruijswijk very magnanimous there? We heard him at the finish and he really collapsed on the tarmac and he was inconsolable for just a few seconds really, and then he got himself up and he faced the questions like a man, and he was, you know, very sanguine about what happened yesterday, his crash. He says that that's also part of bike racing, the ability to handle a bike coming down a mountain. Didn't blame Chavez for taking the pink jersey, and very philosophical, although, well, he's also very disappointed and mindful of the fact that he might not get a better opportunity to win a major tour.
Well, I think a heroic performance from him, really. If he's got a broken rib, as the medical report said last night, and it was a heavy, heavy crash. He had, wounds elsewhere in his body. There's no doubt he was stiff and in pain, and I thought it was an incredible performance by him, probably the performance of the day if you remove Nibali from the equation. Shall we, just so that we're up to speed with exactly what happened,
let's go live to Watford,
the tail of the tap, over to you, Lionel Burney.
It was another astonishing day on the Giro d'Italia. If you'd said to me on Tuesday night, after Vincenzo Nibali had lost more time at Andolo and sat 4 minutes 43 seconds behind Stephen Kruijswijk overall, that the Italian would go on to win this Giro d'Italia, I think I'd have told you to go and sit in the shade and have a cold drink. But tonight, it looks like that is exactly what will happen after a second successive day of drama in the Alps. This morning, Esteban Chavez of Orica GreenEdge looked in a strong position, having taken the pink jersey from Kruijswijk yesterday. The Colombian's lead of 44 seconds over Nibali did not mean the race was in the bag, but it did mean the Italian would have to pull out something special. And that is exactly what he did. The penultimate stage then, stage 20, was 134 kilometres from Giestra in France to Sant'Anna di Vinadio, over the Col de Var, the Col de la Bonnette and the Colle della Lambarda. There was the anticipated big break at the start of the stage. Sky's Michel Nieve, the stage winner at Cividale del Friuli and second at Risoul yesterday, was first over the top of the Bonnette, which enabled him to take the blue King of the Mountains jersey from Damiano Cunego, who's defended it so well for so long. Others in the break included Alexander Foliferov, the winner of the mountain time trial at Alpe di Susi last week, BMC's Darwin Atapuma, Cannondale's Joe Dombrowski, and the Estonian Ryan Taramay. On the Colle della Lombarda, Atapuma, Dombrowski and Movistar's Giovanni Visconti formed a formidable-looking trio, and for a while it looked like they might fight out the stage win. But they were caught from behind by Ryan Taramay, who crossed the top of the Lombarda first and pushed on to win the stage for Katusha, a day after they lost their team leader Ilnur Zakarin. Atapuma was second after his third place at Sestola and fourth at Corvara, and Dombrowski, who's been so aggressive in the mountains this week, was third. Behind them, Nibali put in his move to win the Giro. When he accelerated, Chavez could not react. Nibali joined up with his Astana teammate Tanil Kanga briefly and then powered on alone to put himself into pink. Tonight, he leads Chavez by 52 seconds. Alejandro Valverde moved up to third, 1 minute 17 behind Nibali, and at the expense of Kruijswijk, who has gone from first to fourth in a little over 24 hours. The Dutchman's bruised and battered ribs clearly took their toll. So tomorrow the Giro concludes with a final stage from Cuneo to Torino, where Nibali will wrap up his second Giro victory and fourth Grand Tour. The jerseys then, Vincenzo Nibali in pink, Nizzolo in red, Nieve now in blue and Jungels in white.
Thank you, Lionel, for your daily tale of the Tapa. Wonderful stuff. Now, Nibali is going to win the Giro, isn't he, now? And there's been a lot of questions about his turnaround over the last couple of days. He seemed to be lacking form earlier in this Giro, peddling squares. He was over 4 minutes down at one point. Now, we've had an email actually from a listener with quite a few comments on Twitter and so on. You'd expect that. We've had an email from a listener who said, asked us, you know, reasonably enough, if you think that a cyclist can recover from being on the ropes to winning in two stages, then you need to question yourself. Says a few other things. Astana is one of the dirtiest teams going around. Don't settle for headlines and the easy story. So that's us told. What do you make of that, Daniel? I mean, there are murmurings of, you know, questioning of Nibali's apparent turnaround. Is that fair?
I think it's inevitable in the context, and it would almost be unfair if there weren't those questions when we've heard those questions before aimed at people like Chris Froome. And, you know, also you look at the context mentions there of Astana being dirty. There are people associated with Astana and working for Astana who have a fairly questionable, dubious past. I mean, Alexander Vinokurov, of course, tested positive for a blood transfusion. He's the team manager. Beppe Martinelli, the director sportif, who was the director sportif Marco Pantani, just at the press conference there, where everyone was focusing on what Nibali was saying. But I turned around and saw Emilio Magni, the doctor of the Astana team, who I spoke to the other day. Magni was a former doctor of Pantani and also at the Fassa Bortolo team. You can make these associations. However, as a counterpoint to that, you can also say that Nibali has always been relatively transparent or relatively clear in his stance on doping, and he's always been quite firm and quite impressive when he's talked about doping or anti-doping. And also, you look at the field here of the, and you know, we did say similar things when Nibali won the Tour de France in 2014. It was a relatively weak field. And unfortunately, the same applies really here. It's been a fantastic race, and Chavez has really surpassed himself, ridden brilliantly. But he's not one of the Galacticos, is he, of world cycling? Talking of Galacticos, though, we've been joined by one of the Galacticos of journalism.
Well, Ciro Scognamiglio. Ciro, how are you?
Ciao, listeners, and happy to be here again. Yes, I'm a Galactico of journalism. It's true. It's nothing new. And yes, well, a great day for Vincenzo Nibali, but I have a revelation for you, listeners, only for you, that immediately after the victory, I had the possibility to speak a little bit with Vincenzo, and I said to him, Vincenzo, I mean, I want to be clear with you, okay? A great victory, certainly incredible. I mean, you seem to be really weak in a certain point, but now you are the strong. But after this victory, anyway, I'm not supposed to join you in Passo San Pellegrino for the training camp in which you will prepare the Tour de France. Not at all.
Hang on, Ciro. We're having a serious conversation there. Because Nibali's turnaround and his sudden resurgence over the last couple of days has raised eyebrows, and there are murmurings that it is suspicious and we should be dubious about this. I mean, what would you say to those people who are questioning how quickly he's turned it around, how spectacularly?
Well, the culture of suspicion, I mean, it's something in a certain way understandable for the past that had cycling. But, I mean, in my opinion, it's useless. I mean, I don't like suspicion at all. Certainly, I mean, if you have proofs of something, it's certainly good to talk about. But otherwise, how can we say? We say that at the end, the favorite of this Giro on the paper, because when we start from Apeldoorn, Nibali more or less was the favorite between Landa, that he got retired, and between Valverde, they were the three favorites. I mean, at the end, Nibali won the Giro with not really a huge gap on other contenders that, as Daniel told before, on the paper are not of the same level of Froome, Contador, Quintana, so...
I said this to you, didn't I, Daniel, as we were watching it, that, you know, that Nibali was riding away not from Quintana, Contador, Froome, but from a very tired-looking Chavez and Stephen Kruijswijk, who's been a revelation in this race and is racing, you know, with an injury.
And Ciro spoke about producing hard evidence rather than speculation. I can produce some fairly hard evidence that Vincenzo Nibali did stick a needle in somewhere in his anatomy at some point in the last 24 hours or 48 hours, and it did revitalize him. Do you know what the needle was or the needles were? He got his acupuncturist flown in, a Belgian acupuncturist called Eddie de Schmet, I think, who helped him in the 2014 Tour de France. And he made, I don't know whether it was an emergency call or whether he was always due to come in, but I understand that he underwent some acupuncture and he felt that that had a fantastic restorative effect.
The point I was making was that what we've seen the last couple of days have been a normal Nibali, the Nibali that we've seen over the last 4, 5, 6 years in Grand Tours. We've not seen a Nibali riding with new...
We've not seen a Cannibali, have we?
We have not. And also, he's won the Giro by a slim margin. He's won these stages with late attacks. Somebody on Twitter, to me, compared it to Floyd Landis in 2006. I can't remember how long his solo break was, but it was extraordinary, and I don't think it bears any comparison with that.
And do you know what? I think we might have seen Vincenzo Nibali, or we might be seeing Vincenzo Nibali winning his last Grand Tour. The last Grand Tour that he's going to win, because I sense that he's just tipped over
the
peak of his powers. Chiro?
Maybe.
32 now, isn't he?
Well, he will turn 32 at November, the middle of November. It's possible. I must confess that I had a possibility two hours ago, to speak a lot with Carlo Franceschi, was the historical director of Vincenzo Nibali when he was under 23 in Mastro Marco. As a matter of fact, he told me that he's convinced that Nibali, we know that he has been a second father for Nibali, he's convinced that Nibali will remain more or less at this level till 36 years old. Who knows? For example, in this Giro, we have an evidence from Valverde. Well, Valverde, it's really impressive for me. He was on a podium on a Grand Tour for the first time almost 13 years ago, third in Vuelta 2003, and now third in the Giro 2016.
Yeah, but Chiro, Valverde is someone who does 1,000 sit-ups a day, cycles every day of the year. As you have told us on several occasions, Nibali doesn't even like cycling. He doesn't even like riding his bike.
He like sit-ups.
Oh, no, I mean, it's not really correct, dear Daniel and dear Richard. No, as a matter of fact, maybe it's true that Vincenzo doesn't like at all the training, the part of training in cycling. Well, it's really serious. I mean, when he has to prepare a race, he prepares in a way really professional. Maybe he doesn't like really much this aspect of cycling, but in a certain way he's professional. So,
well, I mean, it's not just us and people watching who've been surprised by Nibali's turnaround. It's his own team. A couple of days ago, I spoke to Jakob Fuglsang, and he... So that was in Pinerolo. And he said that he would be going for stage wins over the remaining days because, as he put it, Nibali was out of the overall picture. I caught up very briefly with Jakob Fuglsang. I was running, he was riding towards anti-doping. And as we travelled together briefly, I asked him...
You make it sound like a beautiful journey you undertook together.
It was a wonderful moment we shared. And I asked him about that comment he made the other day. Here he is. Jakob, I spoke to you a couple of days ago and you told me Vincenzo was out of it on GC. I guess you were wrong.
Looks like it, huh? Luckily.
So Fuglsang there, we heard from, just was unfortunately a very brief exchange, but he seemed as surprised as a lot of people that Nibali had turned it around. And I'm not sure with hindsight that we should be that surprised. We have to bear in mind that the guys who had the big lead on him, Kruijswijk and Chavez, Kruijswijk crashed and Chavez cracked.
And, oh, Chiro wants to say something. I'm going to defer to Chiro because he's got to run in a minute.
No, I mean, it's something special, I mean, to notice that, as a matter of fact, in the career of Nibali, there are really some moments of luck and a lot of moments also in which he has been really unlucky. For the moment, okay, yes, in this Giro, for example, Kruijswijk crashed. We remember the Tour de France 2014, Froome and Contador crashed, for example. But as a matter of fact, sometimes, for example, remember when in the first Giro in which he took the first time the pink jersey, 2010, he crashed in Montalcino when he had the pink jersey. He crashed in... in the World Championship in Florence in 2013. It was very strong and he arrived only fourth. So listeners, which is the meaning about the... Well, the meaning is that the wheel turns, and this means that also for me the wheel turns, in the meaning that now I'm here, but in less than a month I will be on holidays, fortunately.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you to Eurosport for sponsoring the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia. They sponsor us all year, and at the Grand Tours they sponsor our daily Pedaleur de Charme competition. We've still got one t-shirt left, Daniel. I said earlier that Mikel Nievi would get it for winning King of the Mountains, but I've changed my mind actually. And there were a lot of nominations for various people. Alejandro Valverde for reading the newspaper mid-stage, Kruijswijk for his courage, really.
What about Rigoberto Urán?
Urán. Esteban Chavez's parents were also nominated for embracing Nibali at the finish. But I think Rigoberto Urán for his little dig out for his mate Chavez. I think we're going to try and get a t-shirt to Rigoberto Urán tomorrow. You want to talk about Nibali again?
Yeah, I mean, Chiro's obviously gone. He's disappeared in a puff of smoke, his customary puff of smoke. On Nibali, again, I've been labouring the same points again and again in this Giro. One has been about altitude, and he actually mentioned that in his press conference that he felt that he was the best rider at the very highest altitude in this Giro. But another one is just, again, following on from what Chiro said about Nibali's resilience. I mean, I've kept trotting out this statistic of Nibali finishing every Grand Tour he's done, apart from the Vuelta, in which he was disqualified last year. And again, you know, whatever problems he had and whatever fixes that he found, it just epitomises that resilience and that robustness that Nibali has. He found a way to negotiate his way, negotiate through health problems, you know, problems with his morale, issues with sensitivity to criticism that we heard about from Paulus Longo yesterday, and that is why he is such a fine Grand Tour rider. And he's really inching his way towards the pantheon of Italian, certainly Italian cyclists. I mean, he's up there now with Felice Gimondi, and he's not too far away in terms of Grand Tours won from the likes of Fausto Coppi, and he's quite away from Coppi, but Gino Bartoli, Girardengo.
Another point I think worth making to look at Nibali's victory in a much wider context, looking at, you know, back historically as well, is that the sorts of turnarounds we've seen here, which riders losing 1 or 2 minutes, 3 minutes, cracking, appearing to crack, appearing to recover, this was a phenomenon that didn't happen an awful lot throughout the 90s and early 2000s, when we know that EPO and blood doping were a major issue in cycling. Riders rode incredibly consistently in those days. Going back further in the 80s and the 70s, I mean, Eddy Merckx could claim 8 minutes one day and lose 6 minutes the day before in 1971. These are rough times. But Bernardino as well would gain 4 minutes and lose 4 minutes the next day, as he did in the 1986 Tour de France. These things used to happen a lot. And I think we've seen it more the last few years. We've seen riders have bad days collapsing, coming back. And, you know, again, I don't think Nibali rode away from everybody today in a super exceptional or impressive fashion. Those he was with were tired and they cracked.
Yeah, and Astana played a perfect tactical game again. I mean, they've got the manpower to do that, but they did perhaps the obvious thing, and what shall henceforth be known as the Richard Moore method of riding major mountain stages, pinging guys down the road. And we all know they were going to do it. Matt White, the Orica Green Edge director sportif, and Esteban Chavez's director sportif knew they were going to do it, but it was very successful because they picked the right guy. It was Tanel Kanga, the Estonian rider, went off down the road, and he was very helpful at the point where just after Nibali, where Nibali attacked on the top of the Lombarda, where that climb really goes into a completely different landscape and it becomes quite wild and it becomes quite difficult and the altitude starts to tell. And Kanga there played a vital role, and I spotted him lurking behind the press tent just above the finish line in Sant'Anna di Vinadia tonight, and he really just seemed to be savouring the scene and cherishing the moment, watching the crowds disperse, watching Nibali go up to take his pink jersey on the podium. And I managed to grab a quick word with Tanel Kanga. You seem to be savouring the moment and just watching, well, Vincenzo go up there to take his pink jersey and, yeah, really taking it all in.
Yeah, I have to say I was pretty emotional after the finish. Normally I don't have too many emotions, but today was really a hot day. I think I just didn't have the legs to pull a little longer, but fortunately he didn't need it also. I was in the day's breakaway, and of course I could have played the stage victory, but I'm happy the way it went.
And you seemed to execute the plan perfectly. I imagine that was exactly what you hoped for, how the race went, you know, from the team's point of view.
Exactly. We needed to have at least one guy in the front, either me or Fuglsang, but he stayed in the back and did an awesome job after with Scarponi again. So I was the man for the breakaway, and I can't complain. I had pretty good legs compared to yesterday, but in the run, in the end, I was just empty. I didn't have any more fuel in my tank. I was not saving myself, but I was trying to help a little bit my old teammate, my old friend Tarame, because I knew that if they make me stop, then I have no chance to play the stage. So I better help him a little bit, and I don't know if it was if I was helpful or not, but he was strong enough to win the stage, and I'm really, really happy. The problem is when you set up on the road for 5-6 minutes and you need to go immediately 400 plus watts, yeah. That was the problem. I should have continued, maybe I should have already let them go a little bit earlier, let's say 5K from the stop, take my pace and wait the group to arrive. I think it was not a good idea to stop me completely, put my legs down, because when I had to push, I didn't feel good to start again from zero.
And what do you think has turned this Giro around for Vincenzo? Was it something that clicked in his head, or something the director said, or what do you think turned things around?
I think he was just physically suffering the first 2 weeks. He was not there. Maybe he just needed to get the race days on his legs. And also, I think it was important to have one or two good stages. Maybe not exactly the victory. Then he was already really good. Just to give him some extra motivation after all the bad things that happened in the beginning in time trial and the chain coming off and stuff like that. We have enjoyed together a Tour victory and a Giro victory before, and we have a great team, and I have had a beautiful 6 years in Team Astana, and I hope we still have good moments to come.
I'll leave you to recover and eat your pasta. Thank you.
So that was Tanel Kangar, a previous Pedler de Charme winner from the Tour de France last year.
Yes, Richard, and you mentioned there the speed that Nibali was travelling at on those climbs. Just when we'd finished recording there, Tanel Kangar said that when Nibali came up behind him on the Colle della Lombarda, what he shouted to him, the precise instruction, this is maybe a bit of an insight into the way Grand Tours are ridden now, was a wattage, a number. He shouted out, I think he shouted out about 375. Ugh. And that was the only instruction that Kangar needed, really.
He
just fixed his eyes on his SRM meter or his power meter, and that's what he did for as long as possible.
Well, I was talking about Eno and Merckx and harking back to days of yore earlier, but they certainly didn't do that, Daniel. They just did a lot of guesswork and instinct.
No, we were talking the other day as well about the relationships in teams and this assumption that teams are this really tight-knit groups. And I don't know if you've noticed, but when Nibali talks about Fuglsang and Tanel Kangar, he always uses their full name as though they're only passing acquaintances.
Yeah, it's an odd one. What's that noise?
Guardai nello specchio e dissi a me stesso: Squalo, sei il figlio del lupo, il nipote dell'orso, il padre della leonessa di Lugano. Questa maglia rosa la devi all'intero regno animale. I looked in the mirror and I said to myself, Shark, you're the son of the wolf, the grandson of the bear, and the father of the lioness of Lugano. You owe this pink jersey to the whole of the animal kingdom.
Daniel, that was an eccentric Shark's Tale. I didn't actually see you with the book today.
Did you not, Richard?
I did not see you with the book today, Daniel. Where's it come from?
Well, Richard, you've heard of poetic license. And today, unfortunately, we had to leave our car, our Maserati, about 3 kilometres from the finish line. And unfortunately, I left the autobiography, Vincenzo Nibali's autobiography, in the car. So I had to make that up. That was entirely off the top of your head. In fact, you're the accomplice because you made that up.
Yeah, it's got a more perfect.
It was a good one though, wasn't it? Probably the best one. I should stress.
I'll do it every night.
No, I have not done that on any other night. Just I don't want the credibility of the Shark's Tale feature to be undermined.
This is a problem though, isn't it? You know, Nibali's got Vinokourov, which undermines his credibility. You've now got an admitted moment of fraud, which undermines your credibility. It will make people question everything that you do from now on. On the subject of the Shark's Tale, though, the book is sitting on the back seat of the car. I hope that is not, that, you know, passing fans don't spot it and break into our car to steal it. That would be a disaster, wouldn't it?
It would.
Now, Daniel, the other story of the day from the cycling podcast point of view was the battle for the stage win. Our diarist, Joe Dombrowski, did what he's been promising to do for about the last week, and that was to make it into the race-winning break.
Well, and it was interesting, the winner was Ryan Taramai, and we heard there Tanel Kanga, his countryman. Actually, I'm not sure his Astana team would be terribly pleased to hear him say this, but his priority when Astana called him back was to eke out maybe a kilometre or so, helping Ryan Taramai before he dropped back to do his job for Vincenzo Nibali. And we did talk quite a bit about what alliances might materialise on the road today, didn't we? Thinking more about the battle for general classification, thinking that Rigoberto Urán would help Esteban Chávez, which he did to a certain extent. But yeah, Kanga might have played quite a key role in Taramai beating Joe Dombrowski.
I wondered if, and also overnight, I got a couple of messages from people suggesting that Nibali might also call in a few favours. There are three teams, major teams here, sponsored by Specialized, the bike manufacturer.
Tinkoff did a fair bit Tinkoff of work did a lot considering Rafa Michael didn't look to be on a particularly great day.
So, not sure about that. But Joe Dombrowski, a sterling performance. I thought he looked very, very strong. He knows these roads very well. He trains on them, as we're going to hear in a second. I mentioned these are diaries. He's recording a daily diary throughout this Giro for the Cycling Podcast, for friends of the Cycling Podcast. It will be released the Friday following the Giro as a friend special. Become a friend at thecyclingpodcast.com for £10. And the Joe Dombrowski diary is one of 11 special episodes you will get this year. Also hoping to arrange a live event in London with Joe later in June. So stay tuned for details of that. It's 99%. Certain to happen, depending on Joe's racing commitments and travel commitments. But let's hear from Joe Dombrowski. I caught up with him immediately after the stage. He finished third on the stage, which is a good result for his first Giro and second Grand Tour. Here he is.
Joe, that was some day out you had.
Yeah.
What happened? The cameras were off you because there was a lot happening behind, but what happened towards the top of the climb there on the descent?
You know, it's a bit. I know the climb super well because us guys in Nice come up here to Isola to train at altitude. So I tried to attack at the bottom because I knew it's hard, and then it's not as hard after, so I wanted to make a bit of a selection. But it was headwind coming up, so it made it a bit tactical. I felt good and was, I don't know, attacked a couple times, followed some stuff, and then I think Visconti and myself weren't really expecting Terme to just chip off the front, so there was a bit of hesitation because, you know, it's like you look at the strongest guy and you follow him, but then if somebody comes back, you think, it's, you know, they're not going anywhere. And it turned out he was going somewhere.
So you underestimated him a little bit, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he knows, he lives in Monaco, and I know he trains out here too, so he knows all the roads. And on a climb like that, where it's a bit headwind, bit tactical, and you have to, you know, use your energy in the right places, I think he rode a super good race, to be honest.
I mean, we're talking to you just minutes after you cross the line, so it's maybe not fair to ask, you know, what your reaction is, but you're third on the stage and it's a fantastic result, but I think you felt that you were the strongest in that group, didn't you? And you must have felt you could win that.
Yeah, I felt like I could win it, and I've wanted to win a mountain stage in this Giro since the start of the year, but this was really the one, because it was like I know all the roads, my family was at a K to go, so I've wanted to win really bad today, but you know, it doesn't always work out. We came here riding for Rigo, and that was for me the main thing. And then as a secondary thing, if I could go for a stage, then that's what I wanted to do and try and win a mountain stage. But you know, almost every mountain day I think I've been up in the front doing something or trying something. And today was the closest I came to actually taking a stage. So I think if you want to win, unless you're going to win out of the GC group and follow the GC group, you have to try a lot.
You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport, who are sponsoring us at the Giro d'Italia, and there's 20% off to listeners of the podcast. If you go to scienceandsport.com and at the checkout enter the code SIS20, that's SIS20, you'll get a whole 20% off for the duration of the Giro. That, so you've got until tomorrow basically to, as I've said before, fill your boots with energy gels, another delicious and very useful product. In fact, I might just do that myself, because I've got a couple of events coming up, Daniel. I better get on the computer and order my Science and Sport products. We heard
you
just
better also do some training.
Well, no, I could just use the Science and Sport products. I've heard that they
don't think that works.
No, that's what I understand. My understanding is that they can be a substitute for training, so that's good. So we heard there from Joe Dombrowski before that little break, and let's hear from one of Stephen Croswick's teammates, Jos van Emden, who rides for Team Lotto NL Jumbo, or Mumbo Jumbo, as we might be calling them. We met a friend last night who's christened that team Mumbo Jumbo. Not very flattering nickname, is it? But they came very close to winning the Giro with Stephen Croswick. A lot of people think he would have won had he not crashed. Do you think he would have done, Daniel?
I think there's the kind of speculation that Lionel doesn't like to indulge in. I mean, judging by his performance today, he wasn't particularly badly affected by the crash. I mean, he did say that it had impacted his performance to a certain extent.
It would have done.
You would imagine so. I mean, certainly like the shock factor, you know, the physiological shock, it probably took something out of him, and, you know, the blow to his morale and his team's morale that he must have suffered last night. But he still rode incredibly well, and big regrets, I think, on the part of that team. They were so close, and professional cycling isn't Space Invaders, or it's not controlled by radio, and it's not, you know, you can't just do exactly what you want when brakes go down the road. It's not as simple as just getting into a break. However, a 28-man break went yesterday, and to not have anyone in it, and this was on a fairly flat part of the course. Remember that the majority of their team are roulers. To not have anyone in it, I think, is either begs questions about the personnel and their form at the moment, or the selection of riders for this Giro.
Anyway, Jos van Emden, some of you might remember, I interviewed him in Andalou at the end of stage 16, and that little very brief and terse exchange opened our episode that evening. When I went to see him today, he smiled because he recognised me, and he references that interview at the start of this interview. Here is the sort of road captain at Lotto NL Jumbo, Jos van Emden.
Quick word. I spoke to you at the top of the mountain, do you remember?
Yeah, sorry, man. That day was... Oh.
It was a good interview, though. We managed to bleep it, so it's good.
Yeah. I get some reactions I didn't hear, but that day that was cruel. It was...
Well, it came across in the interview, I think. You know, there was a hard day. A lot of people were in quite a state at the finish. Obviously, ultimately disappointing, I guess. How was Stephen last night?
Well, I wasn't sharing a room with him, so he came back in the hotel at 11, I think. So I quickly visited him in the room. Yeah, I just give him a hug and so to show that we support him and that we don't blame him. And I didn't expect him to do so well today. So
was it obvious this morning that he was in quite a lot of pain?
Yeah, of course, when you got a broken rib is terrible. So that he managed to keep on fighting these days, hats off, really, really impressive. And it's a shame he doesn't get the reward of being on the podium. So at the end it's disappointing.
I understand that when he was in the pink jersey this last week, you were you sort of relish the role of being his bodyguard, as it were, and, you know, looking after him.
Yeah, someone has to do it. And but we all did. We got an amazing team here. Lots of media were writing and saying that we had not a strong team, but I think we do have a strong team. And
Because is it unfair, because we perhaps don't see him surrounded by teammates in the mountains, is that create a false perception of we don't see the work that goes on apart, away from there?
True. Of course, there could have been one more helper uphill, but the team made a decision, made a selection together with Steven. And also my opinion is that you better have some good workers for the flat part than uphill, because most of the time when they go when they open the gas uphill, the helper uphill is also dropped. So the balance in the team was really good. You got Chalingi, who can go on for whole day, and then we got Primoz and Batahin, who can go uphill for a shorter while. So on the shorter mountains, they were there. And when it's hectic, I'm there, then he's always in a good position. So then first you got Chalingi, then you got me to put him in a good position on the right moment. And you got Tankink with his experience. So
and ultimately it was a crash that cost him the victory, wasn't it?
I think he would have won the Giro. So yeah, it's really, really hard.
So you come back next year, he comes back next year, you come with him to help him win next year?
I want to come back. I think the Giro is the nicest Grand Tour to do. If he wants me to be there, I'm there.
So that was Jos van Emden, obviously very disappointed that Kruiswijk didn't win the Giro and also lost his place on the podium to Alejandro Valverde, who has yo-yoed a bit the last couple of days but rode strongly again today.
He had, and he has shown all of his experience in the last few days. He has ridden in a contrasting fashion to Steven Kruiswijk, hasn't he? We've spoken over the past 24 hours since Kruiswijk's collapse to a few team managers, various people around the race, and one interesting theory expounded by Dave Brailsford this morning, the Team Sky manager, was that Kruiswijk probably spent too much energy when he was feeling very good, and particularly the state of Pinerolo. He tried to attack and he tried to put pressure on and he tried to really lay down a marker and show who was boss in the race. I mean, at the time, I personally thought that was probably a smart thing to do, because, you know, I've talked about this idea of isolating everyone. He's isolated, so why not isolate Nibali, why not isolate Valverde, why not isolate Chavez, etc. And sometimes that has worked. On that particular day, well, it came 24 hours before a major mountain stage going over the Agnello, and it could be that he just spent too much energy on that day.
I think
he
showed a lack of experience.
Yeah, lack of experience. But as we said, in contrast to that, Valverde has ridden to his limitations, really. I think he's known that he's not the strongest rider, or not among the strongest two or three riders at high altitude. But he knows exactly now, and particularly since last year, finishing on the podium at the Tour, he knows exactly how to manage his strength in a major Tour. And he rode very well again today, without ever really looking like he was going to challenge for the pink jersey, which overnight looked possible. He was only, well, he was just under 2 minutes down on the pink jersey.
Let's hear from him. You spoke to him at the finish.
I'm really happy. I think people watching thought I'd won. I looked so happy. I thought it'd be hard, but we finished third, and I wasn't that far from second in the end. With what the team did on the last climb and Visconti's great help, I'm really happy. This is only my first Giro, and I've had a fourth place, a third place, I've won a stage. I was third on general classification. It's been phenomenal. Some days I've been better than Nibali, and some days he's been better than me. I think we've both ridden a good race, and Chavez as well. I've loved this Giro. I've enjoyed it every day, and tomorrow I get to see my wife and kids. I promised them I'd get on the podium, and that's where I'll be.
So that was Alejandro Valverde, and he moved up to third overall. The other big change today was in the destination of the blue jersey, which went to Mikel Nieve of Team Sky. Salvaged something for them. We met Dave Brailsford this morning on his bike, and he said that was the goal today, was to put Nievi in the blue jersey. So, unfortunately for you, Daniel, and Damiano Cunego.
Well, not really unfortunately for me. I mean, we're not blood relatives or anything like that. Or even close friends.
Quietly rooting for him, maybe, no?
No, I think it's a slight shame because, as we mentioned the other day, this was the first flicker of life, really, from Cunego in a major race for quite some time. However, there were also all of the portents were there, all of the signs were there that he was going to struggle over these two stages, and he himself seemed very downbeat, downcast, pessimistic about his chances of keeping the blue jersey, and so it proved. You know, if you look at the Giro route, you look back at it now, the major climbs were all packed here, weren't they, in the last two big mountain stages, with 35 points for the first man over first category climbs. It was always going to be decided on these 2 days, and Cunego just came up short ultimately. But, you know, a good Giro for his team, having had that jersey for almost 2 weeks.
Well, I spoke to Nievi's teammate, Ian Boswell, one of the young Americans who featured in our friend special, Young Americans, which was released a few weeks ago. Dombrowski was also in that one. And so was Larry Warbass, who I spotted at the side of the road as we drove up the climb to the finish in full cycling kit. He lives in Nice with those other guys and had obviously ridden out. He started the Giro, but sadly abandoned. He had an injury. He's obviously back on his bike. He rode most of today's course in reverse yesterday, and today he rode out to the final climb. So he was standing there supporting him, which was nice to see. And yeah, here is Ian Boswell.
You know, the Giro is a beautiful race. So beautiful, I think next year I want to watch it from the television. No, it's a good race, but it's dramatic. And I think Nibali took the pink today, which is good. No, it's a nice race, but it's different than maybe the Giro or the Tour. So,
Euro de Vuelta last year, of course, is that a level up from that, do you find?
I don't want to say I think actually the racing was, like, just like, if I'm a science guy, the racing was actually easier than the Vuelta. But I think the style of racing is harder for someone like me. Maybe than it would be if I was doing the Vuelta. You know, shorter climbs, steeper climbs, you know, a bit more punchy type riding. But no, it's a beautiful race. But
you've had two Grand Tours, and both you've lost your leader.
Maybe that's bad luck. Yeah, I mean, it could have gone very different. I think, you know, within the team, you know, Nieve won the KOM jersey today, and you know, we won the stage and had some decent results. We never stopped trying, but I think it's a blow anytime you lose your leader. And you know, last year with Froome in the Vuelta, and then this year with Landa, it's tough. But
what's it like, you know, in the team to have such a purpose, a sense of purpose, a very clear job, and then from one day to the next it's kind of gone? Is it disorientating? Is it difficult?
Yeah, no, I think in some, like me who's in this team, you know, I've really developed that role and I really enjoy that and get a lot of satisfaction out of riding for a clear leader. And I think it's easy for us to kind of get a bit lost when we don't have a leader, and especially with our team. And you know, some people are adapt better, like Nieve, who's able to go out and win stages, but I find that my role in the team is pretty specific to having a clear leader.
Have you been growing that moustache throughout the Giro? Is that a more recent thing?
Yeah, it's maybe 4 days now. I just saw my girlfriend down at kilometer one. I gave her a kiss and she didn't like it too much, but I'll go ride back down and see what she has to say.
So we heard there from Ian Boswell. And Daniel, now we've got to try and get down off this mountain. How are we going to do that?
It's a great question, because as I said, the Maserati is about 3 kilometers away.
We could probably
roll down, or I could just push you down the mountain, and I reckon you'd get there.
Yeah.
We had a lot of cheese. There was a buffet at lunchtime, wasn't there? And it was mainly composed of cheese, wasn't it?
I did eat quite a lot of cheese.
But not round cheese.
Delicious cheese.
Not really cheese for rolling, was it?
No, it's not made me quite round enough to roll down the mountain. But
that big parmesan there. Did you see that big parmesan?
I ate most of it.
That would have gone down like a dream. Anyway,
enough nonsense. We have to go to our hotel and then on to Turin tomorrow for the Torino-Turin for the finale of what's been a really enjoyable Giro. And, you know, I'm sure some of you will have further questions about maybe some of the things we've said tonight about Nibali and whether we should be suspicious or not. The questions are absolutely justified. And, you know, I think Giro in amongst the nonsense, made a good point about evidence being necessary, and you know, that's hard to find when we're talking about doping. But let's be skeptical but not cynical is the sort of take home, I think, isn't it?
There's always wisdom amid the insanity with Giro, isn't there?
So there's a lot of wisdom there, I think. Anyway, let's leave it for there. We'll no doubt return to this topic. We'll certainly return to the Tour de France, and we'll probably return to it tomorrow. That's all for now. Thank you very much, Daniel.
Thank you, Richard.